Please be seated. Good morning. We are delighted to welcome all of you, but we have with us students from Menominee Falls High School. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. These students are here with a program sponsored by the Court of this state, the Supreme Court, and the State Bar of Wisconsin. Students from around the state are invited to attend an oral argument. If they accept the invitation, they're sent materials about the case, and they may engage in a variety of activities relating to the case. They then come to the court, listen to the oral argument, and meet with the justice after the oral argument. Everyone is invited to that meeting. The discussion is on the procedures of the court in accepting and deciding cases, not the substantive issues of the case. If anyone would like a summary of this case as to the facts and the questions of law presented, if you'd raise your hand, the marshal will distribute a summary. Okay, if not, I will proceed by introducing the court. On my far right is Justice Ziegler. You will meet with this justice after this hearing ends for a discussion of the procedures. Seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. To his left is Justice Patience Rogensack. And on the far left is Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I will also call your attention to the fact that at 11 o'clock this morning, there is a testing of the fire alarm system in the building. So if we are still here, it will be loud and noisy. If you're meeting with Justice Ziegler, it will be just as loud and noisy. Then. 08AP1684, Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra versus the Department of Revenue. Arguing on behalf of the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra is Robert A. Schnurr. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Robert Schnurr, and I am counsel for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra in this proceeding. With me at the counsel table is my partner, Timothy Shalley. This is a sales tax case, and the question presented is whether tickets of admission sold by the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra to its orchestra concerts are subject to Wisconsin sales taxes under Section 7752-2A2 of the Wisconsin statutes. The Tax Appeals Commission answered that question affirmatively, concluded that all of the Milwaukee Symphony's concerts were subject to sales taxes. We are on appeal from that decision, and as this court has indicated many times, in a situation such as this, it is the holding of the Tax Appeals Commission that is on review before this court, and not the holding of the Court of Appeals. Before turning to the substantive merits of this case, there are two threshold matters that I would like to respectfully suggest that the court should keep in mind as it's considering this issue. First of all, this case does not involve just the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. It involves the entire Wisconsin nonprofit arts community. And if this court were to affirm the Tax Appeals Commission, it can be anticipated that dozens, for all I know, perhaps hundreds, of nonprofit Wisconsin arts organizations, large and small, throughout the state, would be subject to tax, some of which have not been paying tax in the past based on positions and rulings of the Department of Revenue that the department is saying in this litigation that those prior positions and rulings were too liberal. Now, the second threshold point I would like to mention is that this case does not involve a tax exemption. We are not arguing that the Milwaukee Symphony is exempt from Wisconsin sales taxes. We're not arguing that the arts community is exempt from Wisconsin sales taxes. We are arguing that the Wisconsin legislature did not impose a tax on these types of events and places in the first place. Now, I recognize that to a casual observer, that is a semantic difference, imposition versus exemption. But as this court has recognized, it is far more important than that. Specifically, if a case involves a tax exemption statute, and if the court concludes that the exemption, the applicability of the exemption in a particular situation is ambiguous or uncertain, it being an exemption statute, the court has indicated that that uncertainty, that ambiguity, is to be construed against the taxpayer, narrow construction for the exemption statute, and therefore...
Does the sales tax have any exemptions?
Pardon, Your Honor?
Does the sales tax have any exemptions?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Section 77.54 contains a long list of such exemptions. And this court has addressed those exemptions many times and has uniformly, I believe, stated that when it addresses an exemption statute, it will indeed construe it narrowly.
But the sales, what's the general, is there a general sales tax provision then? Is everything taxable?
Your Honor, Section 7752 says that certain generally, all sales of tangible personal property are taxable unless they're exempt under another section. And the same statute says that certain listed services are subject to tax.
That's my point.
Yes.
That here isn't a general statute that says everything is subject to sales tax. All services are subject to sales tax except. This is only an imposition.
This is only an imposition statute, yes, Your Honor.
And that's very different than other statutes where you have some general provisions and then you have exemptions. That's my point.
Absolutely, Your
Honor.
You
don't disagree with that.
I don't disagree with that at all. And as this court has said many times, when it is dealing with an imposition statute, such as we are dealing with here, listing the various types of services that are subject to tax, when it addresses those type of statutes, it resolves, and if it finds that the application of that imposition statute to a particular situation is uncertain or unclear, this court has stated that that ambiguity is to be resolved against taxability and in favor of the taxpayer.
Let's take a look at the cases, and if you will help me take a look at the cases, because both just in your last two sentences and previously, early in your argument, or yet early in your argument, of course, you made the point, if the application is ambiguous. Now, your opposing counsel at page 26 in his brief says, no, you got that wrong. He says, taxpayer attempts to rely on the principle that ambiguity in a taxing statute should be resolved in the tax in its favor. He says, there is no ambiguity in the tax statute. Show me the words where primary exists, primary purpose, your opposing counsel says in his brief. So you're arguing that the law says if there's ambiguity in its application, he says that's not what the law is, and he cites the Village of Lannan case, which, moreover, the exemption contains no language that the user's primary purpose is to harvest forest products in that case. So tell me why the law is application is ambiguous rather than the, if the statute, taxing statute, is ambiguous.
Your Honor, I would say this, that the statute imposes a tax on certain types of events and places, not all events and places, only in events and places of entertainment, amusement, recreation, and athletics. Just parenthetically, the Tax Appeals Commission concluded that the term entertainment was the broadest of those that subsumed the others, and we agree with that, and so I'm going to address that issue. The tax is imposed only on entertainment events. The statute, however, does not define either the term, the word entertainment, or the phrase entertainment events. That led to litigation over 20 years ago. And there were two cases cited in our brief, the historic sites case involving the Circus Museum in Baraboo, the EAA case involving the fly-in in Oshkosh. And in those cases, the issue in those cases was whether those were, quote, entertainment events under the statute. What the Tax Appeals Commission did, and on appeal in the EAA case, the Circuit Court of Dane County did, was they first looked at the term entertainment. It was not defined in the statute. They looked at a dictionary. They came up with a definition that we have no problem with, something like passing time in an agreeable and pleasant manner. The problem is, and I believe this is in response to your question, that the term entertainment event is not found, entertainment event is not found in any dictionary. And so therefore, what the Tax Appeals Commission did and what the Circuit Court did was to interpret that term, that phrase, entertainment event, as meaning only an event that was primarily entertaining and amusing.
And therein lies part of the rub, that is, the word primarily doesn't appear in the statute.
Yes. But the term primarily is found, is used throughout the tax law, Your Honor. I could give many examples of that. Just to take one example, Section 7754, there is an exemption for events or for purchases by organizations that are charitable, religious, educational, and so forth. The state of Wisconsin, the Department of Revenue, has interpreted that statute as incorporating the federal law, Section 501c3, which contains identical language. That law has been interpreted as applying to any organization that is primarily educational, religious, charitable, and so on. The term primarily is not found in the statute. That has been the way it has been interpreted over the years by the Internal Revenue Service, by the Department of Revenue, and by the courts.
If we would give no deference in the interpretation, because it has been arguably inconsistent, we look at the statute, you know, we can interpret statutes, that's what we do. That's what we get paid all the... Never mind. We can interpret statutes. And so I would say, where's the word? Why should we write in the word primarily in the statute?
Well, again, I could answer that several ways, Your Honor. First of all, I could answer it procedurally and to say, and we discussed this in our brief, is that that was the interpretation adopted 25 years ago by the Tax Appeals Commission, the Circuit Court. The Department of Revenue did not appeal those cases, and under Section 73.015, it is required to follow that interpretation, the primary interpretation, in all subsequent years. That the department applied that interpretation in auditing the Milwaukee Symphony in this case. It applied that interpretation in the litigation of this case before the Tax Appeals Commission in this case. Now, at the 11th hour, of course, it's trying to change that interpretation. We think just procedurally it shouldn't be able to do so. But let me get to the substantive issue that you mentioned, because that was dealt with by Judge Steingass in the Circuit Court decision 25 years ago in the EAA case, where she said that if we didn't use the word primarily, where that leads to is that an event becomes taxable. Essentially, if it has any entertainment component, or if that entertainment component is more than de minimis, And this, she felt, didn't work, because if you applied that interpretation of the statute, or if this court applied that interpretation of the statute, it would sweep under the statute many educational-type institutions that are, even the department agrees, should not be taxed, such as museums. You go to a museum, there is indeed an entertainment component. It's certainly more than de minimis. And Judge Steingass concluded that the legislature would not have intended to sweep all of those institutions under the statute as well.
Is there an exemption for museums from the sales tax?
There is a narrow exemption, Your Honor, for certain types of museums that are under the aegis of the State Historical Society, I believe it is. That was passed after the Circus
but
Museum
But it doesn't
case.
Cover museums generally
no,
in
I
the
think,
state.
No, that's correct, Your Honor.
But where does it impose a tax on museums other than entertainment?
That would be the only way that they would be taxed, and I submit that gets to a point I was going to make anyway, a very important point, which is that the Department of Revenue uses that word exemption throughout its brief, and it distinguishes art museums, for example, from the performing arts by saying that there is no statutory exemption for performing arts, but that art museums are exempt. And the answer is no, they're not. Art museums are not exempt. The only reason...
No imposition of a tax on them either. I don't see the word art museum here.
The only reason... I'm sorry, Your Honor, but the only reason that they're not taxed under the statute dealing with events of entertainment, even though a museum does have some entertaining components, is because the Department of Revenue has concluded over the years, we think quite correctly, that even though a museum might have some entertaining components, it is in fact primarily educational, and that's the reason it's not taxed. And the department has reached the same conclusion for institutions such as zoos.
I don't see any education mentioned here in the statute.
No, Your Honor.
Is there an exemption for educational?
No, clearly there is none, Your Honor. And basically it comes down to this, reading the statute in the way that we suggest it be read, which is it primarily entertainment? Because I would suggest, Your Honor, that what the statute does is create a spectrum. At one end of the spectrum are events that are entirely amusing and entertaining. Those are clearly taxable. At the other end of the spectrum are events that are primarily educational or charitable or religious or anything other than entertainment and amusement. And those are not taxable. And for events that are in the middle that have attributes of both, we submit the question is which of those set of attributes is primary.
How does this work in the for the venues around the state that are performing arts? Let me take the Performing Arts Center in Wausau. There might be an event, a children's 10 o'clock in the morning production of Reduced Shakespeare with a teacher's guide and only students. Maybe argue that would be educational. Maybe argue that. And then on Saturday night, let's say Wausau has the Rolling Stones. Now, and then the following week they have the local ballet company, and the week after that they have some Russian acrobats coming in. Do they charge sales tax on some of the events and not at other of the events? How do they decide? What about the Russian acrobats? Is that educational? What are they supposed to do?
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, I'm not totally sure of the institutional arrangement up there.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that a lot of these are produced by different organizations and sponsored by different organizations.
Oh, but what I'm giving you would be all sponsored by the Performing Arts Foundation.
Then I would say that organization, the sponsor, would indeed have to take a look at the nature of these events and determine whether or not these events were indeed primarily educational or again, religious or charitable or anything like that, or whether they are primarily entertaining and amusing. Now, does that sometimes present a difficult question in deciding which side of the line it falls on? Of course it is, does, Your Honor. Not in our case. I think we're rather clearly are on the educational side of the spectrum.
If I were on the board of the Performing Arts Foundation of Wausau, I'd say, good, Russian acrobats are coming in. At the door, we're going to hand out a two-page book or a two-page pamphlet on the history of acrobats of Russia. I would do that in every performance. I would do that in the reduced Shakespeare performance. I would do that in any performance that we had.
Well, certainly under some circumstances, Your Honor, I think that the event could indeed be deemed to be primarily something other than entertaining and amusing. Okay. I think one thing you would look at, for example, and it's always seemed to be the case here, the Tax Appeals Commission agreed to it, the Department of Revenue has agreed to it. One factor you look at is the motivation of the sponsor. And if the motivation of the sponsor is to make a profit from the event, I would say that it would be very difficult for them to claim that this fell on the non-taxable side of the statutory spectrum.
If you don't want a profit, you shouldn't charge anything. You may not be in the black, but the admissions here is, what, 90% of the operating of the receipts?
No, it's actually about 50%, Your Honor.
Okay. So admissions are charge is important.
The admission charge is certainly an important aspect, but the Milwaukee Symphony clearly goes into every type of concert that they have, knowing that the expenses for that concert are going to exceed their revenues from it, and it's going to have that deficit is going to have to be made up in some other way.
To get back to Justice
Bradley. You remember, you need Bradley back.
Right. Not anymore. Looking at Justice Bradley, you rely heavily on pre-concert lectures and post-concert lectures. Pre-concert lectures, only about 200 out of the 1,600 people show up, right? Roughly.
I think that's approximately correct.
And maybe even fewer, or at least that number, afterwards. You don't have a regular course of instruction, no exams, right?
Clearly correct.
Not even required to listen, not required to read the brochure that you put out, which is mostly advertisements, right?
We put out a publication,
Book.
Your Honor, that
booklet.
Is
I'm sorry, heavily, what's it called?
But the advertisements, that is not ours. That's
right,
in the
I
record. The revenues
that.
From the advertisements go to somebody
right.
else.
Right. That's what the booklet is. What bothers me about this is you've got a statute that says entertainment and entertainment events. You and your brief really deal with an entertainment versus education. Education isn't mentioned. I'm glad that in oral argument you're not sticking with education as the dichotomy, but have broadened it to really anything other than entertainment. So if we accept the concept of primarily, which you accept, Department of Revenue has accepted it, although I will ask Mr. Creon about his brief on that issue. So how do we tell what's primarily entertainment or not? Take a, let me just first say, what difference does it make as to who the sponsor is? You put a lot of emphasis on that this is a 501c3 that the U.S. Post Office recognizes by giving it special breaks, et cetera, et cetera. Suppose you weren't a 501c3, but you were putting on educational events, clearly educational, only for children, $1 admission.
But you and you are a taxable organization, a for-profit?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think under some circumstances, even that would be all right, Your Honor.
Okay. So we're not looking at the entity. We're looking at the event.
And, of course, relating to that, though, Your Honor, what we have said in our brief, and I think this is a critically important factor, is that we would not qualify under Section 501c3. We would not be a charitable or educational religious organization unless our major activity was primarily...
Sir, that's not precisely correct, I don't think, because it depends on how you define education. Now, the Internal Revenue Service defines education very broadly to mean promoting interest in the arts as education. That doesn't mean that we have to define entertainment that way. We don't have to say that if it promotes the arts and is educational for purposes of the IRS, it is not entertainment for the statute. The IRS has a very broad definition of it, education, that does not follow the dictionary. That's in your appendix, right?
Well, but the definition of education, which the Tax Appeals Commission cited here, the definition of education is, again, one which we have no quarrel with. They looked to the dictionary, and they said that it's the process of providing with information and knowledge. That comes from one of their dictionary definitions. We, of course, and we're perfectly happy with that.
Well, what about films, not documentary? Take the film Doubt. Take the play The Lion King or Wicked. All of those. Take Shakespeare. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, Shakespeare might be the easiest one. It's generally recognized that his plays, although they may be cast in historical royal figures, they are really about human life and expositions of the psychology of behavior, and challenging people to think about their lives and their relationships and the relationships with government and people of power. So that's very educational. Are they taxed under the code?
I think under most circumstances, I think my answer would be that they probably would not be, because the contents of the plays were more educational than they were otherwise.
What about the movies? What about Doubt? Did you see Doubt?
I did see Doubt.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we're on a level playing field. One movie I've seen in a year, so let's go. What about Doubt?
I would answer that this way, Your Honor. I would get back to one factor, which I gather Your Honor doesn't necessarily agree with, which is that one factor that enters into that ultimate categorization is indeed the purpose for which the event is put on. And so if indeed the purpose is to make money, which I would say is true with movie theaters, I would say that it would be extremely difficult to prove.
It's the theater, but the people who produce that and the film writer, they're art. The costuming is art. The scenes are art. The words are like Shakespeare. I mean, it's arguable.
Well, Your Honor, I would give this example. We have for-profit educational universities. I would assume that those would not be taxable under the statute, even though they're for profit, because they're overwhelmingly educational. They're entirely educational.
Not under the statute, because they're not listed in 2A or anywhere else as to education being taxable.
Well, but again, there might well be some entertainment component there.
Not likely with exams.
Pardon, Your Honor?
I said not likely with exams. Counsel, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Do you want to sum up quickly?
I would just sum up, Your Honor, by indicating that I think this court can resolve this case in a couple of ways. I think it could look at what we discuss in our brief, the overwhelming consensus of our society that the arts in general and that symphony orchestras as part of that offer far more to the community than merely entertainment and amusements. This court could well decide that the legislature understood that consensus and intended that the arts would be on the educational side of the spectrum. I suggest alternatively, if this court decided, well, maybe the statute could be read that way, maybe it could be read the other way, I would suggest that triggers the rule of statutory interpretation I mentioned earlier, which is this is a tax imposition statute. If it's ambiguous, the ambiguity should be resolved in favor of the taxpayer. Thank you,
Your Honor. Thank you, counsel. Attorney Tom Creeran, representing the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. Mr. Creeran.
May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Thomas Creeran, and I represent the respondent, Wisconsin Department of Revenue. With me at council table is Assistant Legal Counsel Linda Mintner of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. I think it's important to recognize that we are talking in this case about entertainment events to which tickets are sold. The ticket purchaser pays the tax. The legislature decided that ticket purchasers should pay tax on admissions to entertainment events. The rule that the Department of Revenue promulgated is a legislative enactment. It states that admissions to musical performances are admissions to entertainment events.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. Why is it a legislative enactment?
The court has indicated in many cases, such as the Norquist case, that rulemaking is a legislative function. The legislature has the opportunity to review rules promulgated by...
Where does the rulemaking authority come from?
The general rulemaking authority is Section 227.11.
Not a special section.
We're not asserting reliance on any special rulemaking statute in this case.
Just wanted to clarify that.
Although we don't think it would make any difference.
No, you don't. Courts might.
There's no evidence that Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, any other symphony orchestra, or any of the other groups to which Attorney Schnur refers appeared during the legislative process to advocate the position that ticket purchasers are not required to pay tax on concert tickets because they are not entertainment events.
Counselor, there are three different kinds of concerts that are run by MSO, the Classic Series, Pop Series, and the Youth Series, correct? I think you all agree on that in your briefs. I noticed that it was pointed out that in the Youth Series, when classes come to hear concerts, the teachers are sent educational materials about the concerts, and often the classes come all together with their teacher. Do we have to treat all three types of concerts the same way, or is it possible that the Youth Series stand on different footing than do the other two types of concert series?
Well, with each type of concert, I think you look at all the, according to the test applied by the commission in this case, you look at all the facts and circumstances involved. In my opinion, the way that the case was litigated, and you get that from the transcript and the briefs, the position of Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra was because they're a 501c3 educational organization, or under the IRS definition, that all of their admissions to all of their concerts should be tax exempt.
Right. I understand that, and of course 501c3 does make them a nonprofit. But the argument is whether everything they do then falls within or outside of the statute. So I'm looking at the statute a little bit differently. And in regard to the focus on the statute, my question to you as a representative of Department of Revenue is, do we have to treat all three kinds of concert series the same way, or might there be a basis for treating the youth series differently in regard to sales tax, nothing else, just in regard?
There is nothing that says that you have to treat all three concerts the same way. It's the department's position that they're all entertainment events. I mean, these weren't held at schools. These were held in...
Of course not. All right. So, thank you.
Could I ask two questions? First question relates to the opening argument of your opposing counsel. He said that this case affects the entire nonprofit arts community. What is the fiscal impact if you lose?
It would depend on how we lose, but with respect to symphony concerts, there was an estimate done in 2001, and we did indicate in a footnote in our brief, and I can pull that for you if you like, what the tax base was and what the cost was. I think it would be on symphony concerts.
Just this one would be $719,456.69 without interest.
Yes, and presumably this would apply to the court's decision in this case would apply at minimum to all symphony orchestras throughout the state, or all symphony concerts, I should say.
Wasn't that $700,000 for a tax period in the 1990s?
This is
the one I'm quoting, 92 to 96.
Has the tax been collected in the years 1997 and thereafter?
I believe the tax was paid and they filed for a refund several years later.
Okay.
What they've been doing after the tax years covered by this case, in other words, whether they've been collecting the tax after that, I don't think that's in the record. In terms of the general statement that this is going to have a broad effect on the performing arts, I mean, there were three isolated cases of very small organizations that I think Attorney Schnur is referring to. There's no evidence in the record that other than those cases, I'm not even sure what effect those cases, but that this case somehow has some far-reaching effect on organizations that aren't collecting tax. As far as I know, all these organizations are operating under the assumption that these are entertainment events for which they should collect tax, and they do that. And again, it's the ticket purchaser that pays the tax.
Does the court owe any deference to the Tax Appeals Commission?
I think so. I think what... Certainly, it's fair to say the Tax Appeals Commission over the years has struggled with how to apply, what test to apply under this statute. And I think what the Tax Appeals Commission said in this case is, look, when we go back and look at the four cases we've decided, including this one, we're going to look at all the facts and circumstances and then decide based on all the facts and circumstances if this is an entertainment event. Now, there were two difficult cases involving museums, and at the time there was nothing in the statutes about museums. And it's a different question with respect to museums, because the question with respect to museums is, are they places of amusement or entertainment? And the commission struggled with that and used some language in the Historic Sites Foundation case that said, seemed to indicate that they were going to look at the primary purpose of the organization. In the Milwaukee Repertory case, they said, no, that's not what we really did when we decided that case. What we really did is we looked at all the facts and circumstances as shown by our findings of fact and conclusions of law. And the commission said in this case, look, that's what we're going to do here. We're going to look at all the facts and circumstances of the case. Some are more important than others, but we're going to look at all the facts and circumstances.
So it's a question is this, we generally grant deference to the Tax Appeals Commission. What kind of deference?
We're not arguing for anything greater than due weight deference. We think that their generalized experience in construing these statutes their related experience in looking at the rule, and their general experience in construing sales tax statutes. The due weight deference is what was used by the circuit court. Due weight deference is what was used by the Court of Appeals. And we're not arguing for anything more than that in this case.
Well, that means that the court will look to see if there's a reasonable interpretation and if there's a more reasonable interpretation.
Yes.
Right? And if there's a more reasonable interpretation, we can use that.
Yes.
Is that what it means?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what the test is. That's what due weight deference is. I agree with that.
Justice Presser, are you done? Is this a fact issue or a law issue? You seem to think that it's a fact issue, and therefore there's a different rule about deference with facts versus law. What is it?
Substantial evidence in the record, and the commission, as the fact finder, weighs the importance of the evidence, and it's...
What's the fact here?
The facts that the commission emphasized, and again, this is an entertainment event to which tickets are sold. What the commission emphasized is that the advertisements by Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra emphasized that these symphony concerts are entertainment. I think if you're selling tickets, the ticket purchaser wants to know what it's getting. And if you're saying you're getting entertainment, this is what we're selling, that's a relevant fact.
No, but there's no doubt, there's no dispute as to what the advertisements were.
True.
There's no dispute as to what the nature of the concerts were.
True.
There's no dispute that admissions fees were charged.
True.
There's no dispute that the board of directors is a fundraising group, essentially. They do other things. And that it's run like a business so that your expenses do not exceed your revenue. And the revenue here is not only from admissions, but from grants and from benefactors. Right?
I don't dispute it.
All right.
It wouldn't. Your expenses could. Your revenues could exceed your expenses. I mean, that's.
And one year it did, if I read the record straight.
Sure.
Okay. So, there's no dispute about facts. The usual rule that the court applies is the interpretation and application of a statute to undisputed facts is a question of law. Right?
Yes.
Okay. So, why does your brief go into to substantial evidence and treat this, what you seem to want to treat this as a fact case instead of a law case? Or maybe I misread your brief.
Well, the commission, as the fact finder, looks at the facts presented. This was not a stipulated case.
I know, but... there's no dispute about the facts now, is there?
No dispute about the commission's findings of fact.
Right.
And Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra has said in the circuit court that they don't dispute the commission's findings of fact.
Right. So this is only an application of law to those facts.
The commission, in my opinion, weighed some facts more heavily than others concluding that...
And you think we have to give the same kind of weight?
I think so. I mean, I think you have to recognize that the commission was the fact finder based on the evidence presented.
All right. Well, do you think this court is bound by the DOR and the commission and the circuit court and the prior cases to read primarily into the statute?
Not at all.
Should we?
Well,
you seem to back off that on pages 26 and 27 of your brief.
Well, the word primarily is not in the statute. I mean, I think what you could do, and I think, is simply look at all the facts and circumstances and decide whether this is an entertainment event. But I mean, if the commission said, well, look, even to your point, Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, that If this is primarily educational, you win. On these facts, this is not primarily educational. I mean, that's what I think is the importance of the commission's factual findings. I mean, I think it's important that the court indicate what the test should be under the statute. I mean, I presume that's why the court took the case. I don't know that, but
test should be.
I think the test should be whether under all the facts and circumstances it's an entertainment event. At least that's the test. With
how do you define entertainment?
I define entertainment as you know, a pleasurable or agreeable experience.
I didn't have a very good time in doubt.
You know,
it's both entertainment and educational. Suppose it's both entertainment and educational. I go to the symphony, and I go to the pre-symphony lecture, which is an excellent lecture on music appreciation, and an excellent lecture on not only the points that you look for in a performance, but the points you look at in the composition itself. And I go and I listen to the performance, and then I attend an hour session afterwards with maybe people from the orchestra, maybe the artistic director of the MSO, discussing the works heard. So I've had a really good time, and I listen to music on my terms as well as the terms set forth by the experts. But it was an educational event and an entertainment event. What do I do now?
Well, that's one of the reasons why the department has an administrative rule, which is to provide certainty. And we say musical performances are entertainment events.
I know, but the department view some musical performances as not taxable.
Struggling, that was at before the Milwaukee Repertory decision, struggling with the commission's two decisions that applied to museums, which again are the question with respect to museums, whether they are places of entertainment.
Let's take Justice Robinsack's example. Suppose that this is a performance given in schools, with an admission charge, taxable or not?
Well, we have a special statute for that.
Okay, that's why I wanted that cleared. Now we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to put it at the Bartell Theater, and invite school kids, and they can come in for $5. Or $1 a piece, and we're going to provide funds for those children who can't afford it or indigent, and we're going to put on a play about the American Constitution, starring me. This is what's going to happen. It's better.
That's not entertaining.
It is what I say. No, this is true that they do. There is a performance that deals with constitutional issues, and that it's put to song, and that it's an educational as well as entertainment. I haven't seen it, but that's what it's supposed to be. Is that going to be taxable or not? Off school premises.
If you have, I mean, what would be analogous, if, for instance, the rule says plays are entertainment events, okay, then you tax that. That's taxable under the statute read together with the rule until you reach the point where, for instance, if your previous example about lecture about the music, if you reach the point where what it is a lecture as opposed to a musical performance, then it's not taxed.
Okay. What about my example of really of a play dealing with civics? It's really a civics play.
If you have a rule that says plays are taxable, it's taxed unless it no longer is a play
so,
or the.
So to make sure, what do I have to do? Go to the department and get a letter ruling?
Well, that's why we have an administrative rule that.
How long is it going to take me?
I don't really know what the time period is on getting private letter rulings.
I'm putting this on in April.
The reason we have an administrative rule is precisely so you don't have to go get a private letter ruling. It provides certainty to taxpayers.
Yeah, but I'm not so certain. I'm telling you what it is, and I want to know where it fits with certainty. It's the problem here.
Again, if you have a rule that says plays, and this is a play, then it's taxed.
It's a play.
It's taxed unless it's, if it's an educational lecture rather than a play, it's not taxed.
Okay. It's a play, so it's taxed.
If that's what the rule says, yes.
Okay. Is that what the rule says?
Yes.
Okay. I'm concerned, Mr. Kern, that when you have a rule that says, or when you interpret a statute, to look at the totality of the circumstances, that the taxpayer has very little certainty, and that it forces taxpayers to get a letter ruling. Because if you charge the tax and then find that you didn't have to, it just increases your revenue, right? You can't return it to 1,000 people, can you?
Well, actually, we have a statute that requires the seller to try and if they can locate the people.
It's going to be hard to do.
It would be.
Okay, so it just increases their revenue. But you may have fewer people coming because it increases the price, right?
That's certainly conceivable.
Right. So for the taxpayer who puts on performances of any sort, you want some certainty, and I'm not sure where you get it when you talk about primarily entertainment.
I agree that when you start, the Missouri courts have struggled with this, and what they've essentially said is, if a significant aspect of it is entertainment, then it's a place of entertainment. Now there. Statute doesn't apply to entertainment events. It only applies to places of amusement and entertainment. They had a case there where somebody gave carriage rides around the square, and they argued that it was educational because they were showing them, the Capitol and other historic places. And the court said, no, a significant component of this is entertainment.
I, too, am concerned about how this is to be applied. Your opposing counsel started argument with it involves the entire Wisconsin nonprofit arts community, and Justice Prosser made reference to that. Then, as I understood it anyway, I understood your opposing counsel to indicate that a for-profit universities are educational and would be tax-exempt for this purpose. Did you understand that statement, or did you not understand it?
Well, for-profit, that's why I don't think that the non-profit, for-profit distinction has any bearing at all here. But the Herzing Institute, which is a for-profit university, they are not taxed because we don't have a statute that taxes, college educational services.
There's no tax on the tuition. That would be comparable to the admission.
Correct.
Okay. I think of the Milwaukee Symphony, and I think of it coming to Wausau because the Milwaukee Symphony has been generous enough to go around the state and to perform for a place for people who don't always come to Milwaukee. Is there... If it would perform in the performing arts center in Wausau, which I believe is a 501c3, that's one thing. If the Wausau Events entity, and that entity is associated with the Chamber of Commerce, I don't have any idea how it is structured for tax purposes, but let's say, I don't know what it's structured as. Does it make any difference if who puts it on, if it's the same performance?
It shouldn't. That can't possibly be a workable test. If it's the same performance, it should all be taxed or all be not taxed.
Mr. Curran, you mentioned quite a while ago now the significance of the advertisements or marketing done by the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. What did the commission find specifically was the content of such advertising or marketing devices?
The commission found that Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra was using descriptions, including specific descriptions, using the word entertainment, dazzling, similar types of descriptions to convey to the public that this was in fact entertainment and that Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra did not use any advertising to convey to the public that they would be educated if they would purchase these tickets.
Did the commission find that that was a significant factor in its determination?
It certainly was something that they emphasized. Now, they also emphasized, and I don't completely agree with Attorney Schnur about the definition of education used by the commission, but the commission also emphasized that there was no course of instruction at these concerts, and that it was not clear what, if anything, people came there to learn.
What about that survey?
Well, the survey didn't...
Gallup survey?
I believe part of it was Gallup organization, but the survey didn't use terms like entertainment or attempt to compare entertainment and education, which seemed to be the purpose for which it was attempted to be used before the commission. And the survey was taken years after the tax years involved.
Not specifically for MSO.
Not specifically for MSO.
Or even Wisconsin, if my recollection is right.
I think that's correct. One thing I want to point out is there is no content-based test that's workable for musical performances. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to conveying to people the history of rock and roll and educating them about the history of rock and roll. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, every year when somebody is inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they have a big rock concert. They have Bruce Springsteen, all the greats, come and they give a concert, and the proceeds of the concert go to the museum. But no one would suggest, I think the legislature, if we had the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame here, no one would suggest that one of those concerts, admissions to one of those concerts, would not be an entertainment event.
Would it be taxable, yes or no?
Would be taxable here, yes.
Well, I find a lot of difficulty with the Circus Museum opinion, or lack very much of, in that. Have you been to the Circus Museum?
I have not.
I have. Not the same day I saw Doubt. It has a museum. Probably a small percent of its acreage is devoted to the museum. But then it has a lot of Ferris wheel, animal rides. Then it has a performance, which changes every year, from Chinese acrobats to animal acts to everything else. And you charge, there's one admission fee, as you know, and that's tax exempt.
Well, it's tax exempt by statute now. Because,
right.
But it wasn't at the time the commission decided the case.
Right. So you're saying that even though it's put on in the museum, that might be admission to the Rock and Roll Museum might be tax exempt here, but to the concert it would be taxable.
I'm saying if you held a concert at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum, admission to the concert would be taxed.
But admission to the museum would not be.
Correct. Probably. I mean, well, we have, and I agree with Attorney Scherer on one point. We should have characterized the part of the rule as a safe harbor, which says museums of art, history, science, which would include zoos, by the way, which are museums of science.
Right. Got it.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Scherer? You have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few comments. First of all, with regards to the rule, as Mr. Curran pointed out, the rule states that art museums are, quote, exempt. I talked about that earlier. The department has concluded, and Mr. Curran just agreed, that zoos are exempt. We've challenged the department for the 10 years that this litigation has been going on. We have challenged.
Why has it taken so long?
Oh, there was a long, long delay at the Tax Appeals Commission level, Your Honor, because there was a mutual decision to let the Milwaukee Rep case go forward first, and then there was a long delay with the record. It was nobody's fault, essentially. We challenged the department for all these years to come up with what's the tax relevant difference between looking at a work of art on a museum. Why is that educational while listening to a symphony is entertaining? Why is going to a zoo on a Sunday afternoon to watch the monkeys, why is that educational, according to Mr. Creeron? Whereas spending that same Sunday afternoon listening to a Beethoven symphony somehow is primarily amusing and entertaining. And in all the years we've been asking for some tax-relevant rationale for that type of distinction, we have never gotten an answer. The other thing I'd like to say about the rule, we are a musical performance. The rule ostensibly reaches all musical performance. It reaches all plays, reaches all movies. We submit that the rule just goes beyond the statute, and that even the department recognizes, as it has over the years, that some movies, some plays, some musical performances are indeed primarily educational and therefore outside the scope of the statute. All we are saying is that the Milwaukee Symphony fits within that classification. Second point I'd like to address is there is some concern among the court, and I understand this concern, about incorporating the primarily test into the statute. And the concern is that that can present some administrative problems in enforcing it and in applying it. And unfortunately, that's the very nature of sales taxes, but I would like to point out, again, I didn't quite finish this earlier when I was asked this question, that the term primary and primarily has been written into the law, the tax law, many times by this court. If an organization were to apply to the Department of Revenue for a certificate of exempt status, which allows you to buy stuff free of tax, the department would say, are you primarily amusement, or are you primarily educational, religious, and charitable? The word primary doesn't apply in the statute. But if I went to the department and said, we qualify because we have some component of education and religion and charity, the department would say, no, you have to prove that it's primary because that's the test that has been applied. There's a Gensler case decided by this court, a sales tax case in which the applicable test as determined by this court, the word primary was not in the statute, the applicable test was whether certain equipment was used primarily for common carriage or contract carriage, with trucks and vehicles, or whether it was used for private carriage. The test, again, the word primary was not in the statute. The court incorporated that word into the statute. So unfortunately, yes, that does create some administrative difficulties for some cases. We don't believe this case. But to indicate, as Mr. Creron does, if the word primary doesn't appear in the statute, then you just you never use that word, and you basically define entertainment event as something containing any entertaining aspects. We believe that that goes far beyond the statute. The last thing I'd like to say, and I'm just about done here, goes to the question of deference to the Tax Appeals Commission. I would like to suggest to this court, number one, we've said no deference should be paid to the commission because the commission's decisions over the years have been so inconsistent that they provide no real guidance. This court has said many times that where there is the history of the commission on an issue has been inconsistent, and it doesn't give guidance, you don't give it deference. I think Mr. Creron's discussion today, where he talked about how the rule changed over the years, indicates that inconsistency.
But you want deference to the concept of primarily.
Pardon, Your Honor?
You want deference to the concept of primarily.
I want deference to the primarily because that is the way that the Department of Revenue has enforced the statute over the years. I believe my time is up, and so I just urge the court once again that to decide this case in favor of the Milwaukee Symphony and in favor of the Wisconsin arts community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schnur. Let's thank both Mr. Schnur and Mr. Creon for interesting discussion and briefs on an issue of an interpretation of the sales tax law relating to entertainment. That concludes our hearing on 08-AP-1684, Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra versus DOR. The students should remain, and Justice Prosser will be out as soon as we... I'm sorry, Ziegler. Justice Prosser was yesterday. Justice Ziegler will be out as soon as the alarm is finished, which will go off in a few moments. And the court is in recess until its next oral argument. In recess, the court will meet at 11:30 in the conference room.